listening to Spooky Show with your host, Kate.
So we're recording. That's not Beans, everyone. That's Harrison. Good job. Harrison currently has a huge scratch on his face from Beans, and I can't look at anything but that when I'm looking at him.
Cool.
We got to get some concealer on you.
Sick. Cool. Give this cat love and affection and all it gives me.
You fight with him.
No, we don't fight.
You play fight with him.
We play games together.
Yeah, so why are you surprised?
I don't know.
Anyway, welcome to Spooky Show. Spooky Show and the history of the universe over the life of the stars of
It's the moon. True.
I'm Kate.
And I'm Harrison. And I'm here.
And today, well, first, rate and review on Apple Podcasts and so rate true. On Spotify. Thank you. Next up, I'm going to take ye on a sea voyage. Ahoy.
Arr, you matey.
Ahoy, mateys.
Where are my mateys at?
We're talking about today the Mary Celeste. Do you know this?
I never heard of her.
It's also called the Ghost Ship.
Oh, the titular ghost ship.
I'm not going to say anything else. Let's just do it. You know I like to do that. I like to get the people going in blind, including you, so you feel like an idiot at the end. Just kidding. I don't want my audience members to feel like idiots, but Harrison, me.
I have a scratch.
On my face.
I have a scratch upon my very face.
Okay, let's get into it.
A cosmetic injury.
Let me take you to the year 1860. Do you know who was president?
Well, that would, of course, be when Abraham Lincoln was president, you know, just 5 years prior to his assassination at Ford's Theater in D.C.
Whoa, big brain Harrison.
Hey, I know a lot about D.C.
Wow. And there's a shipyard. It's the shipyard of Joshua Dewis in the village of Spencer's Island, which is on the shores of the Bay of Fundy in Nova Scotia. And at this shipyard, a boat was being constructed.
The very ghost ship, perhaps?
Yes.
Huh.
The ship was constructed with locally felled limber.
Shop local.
With two masts.
Did you say limber?
Yeah.
Lumber, right?
I could have either meant timber or lumber.
I'll put it in there. A limber is like a type of, it's like a adjective for body.
I know, right?
Or like movement.
I think autocorrect must have done something.
This
to
is
me.
A very funny podcast already, even though the listeners will have no idea how funny it is because we will have edited out 2 minutes.
Hey, if you want to hear the unedited version,
you'll never.
Because
I got one fact wrong.
Can you guess which fact it was, listeners, and how he suddenly
it was where
had a
Abraham
brain
Lincoln was assassinated? Yeah.
Okay, so lumber. Timber, I don't know. It doesn't really matter what the ship was made out of, to be honest. So it had two masts and was originally rigged as a merchant brigantine because the ship's owners intended it to be an investment that would make them all rich through transatlantic trade. But when the ship launched on May 18th, 1861, it was originally given the name the Amazon.
Ooh.
And was registered nearby at Parsborough, which is also in Nova Scotia, on June 10th, 1861. So according to the registration documents,
this boat was owned by Jeffrey Bezos.
Jeffrey Bezos.
The Amazon.
According to the registration documents, the ship was 99.3 feet in length and 25.5 feet broad with a depth of 11.7 feet. Of course,
it's really not that big for a boat.
No, I'll post a picture on my Instagram. And this is a bit smaller. Well, actually, a lot smaller than how you would picture, like, a big Pirates of the Caribbean boat. Like,
yeah, no, this isn't that big of a boat.
No, it's a small. It's a small boat. But it's, like, still a ship.
You know? Pretty big. It's, like, 20 cars. They're like, probably, like, 20 cars long.
Just, like, I can't visualize what, like, 40 degrees is in my head. I can't visualize what feet look like in my head. Like, I can't do that. So, I know it's
small. It'd be about
I don't know, 20 of your favorite 5 foot tall person. Just imagine your favorite 5 foot tall person and lay 20 of them flat.
That actually kind of helps.
And tail end, you got yourself the ship. The Amazon is recreated.
The ship was owned by a consortium of 9 people, headed by Joshua Dewis himself, and among the co-owners was Robert McLeland, who was the ship's first captain. So with a captain and with the registration, the Amazon made its maiden voyage in June 1861 and sailed to 5 islands, also in Nova Scotia, to take on cargo of timber. This time it's timber, for passage across the Atlantic to London. But after supervising the ship's loading, Captain McLeland got sick. And he was just getting worse and worse. So the Amazon had to return to Spencer's Island. What do you have?
Just like typical kind of like boat death disease, the plague, like, that you used to get back then? Well, you used to be like, don't get on a ship because you're going to get the ship disease.
The measles? Like, I don't know. Mm. So they had to return to Spencer's Island, and McLeland died in his sleep on June 19th. So super quickly after getting ready to go. Like, they left on June 10th was when it was registered. So he died like very shortly after.
R.I.P.
So a man named John Nutting Parker took over as captain and resumed the voyage to London. But the Amazon was still bringing about some bad luck. Wasn't stopping. On the way there, the Amazon collided with fishing equipment in the Narrows off Eastport, Maine. And then, after the Amazon made it to London and was coming back, it ran into and sank another ship in the English Channel.
Nutting.
It was just like,
what are you doing?
Sorry.
Here? This man is absolutely nutting this up left and right.
I know. So at this point, everyone's kind of like, all right, hang it up, boys. Like, sailors at this time were very superstitious, and many on board were like, you know, this ship might be cursed. Like, we've got one, the captain died. We've gotten into 2, like, big.
And this motherfucker named Nutter is
Nutting.
This man who is nutting. This man who is nutting. He is leading us.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I'm starting to think the ship is a little cursed.
Me too. I'm starting to think this might be a ghost ship.
So the crew allegedly told tales that the Amazon was doomed to suffer the wrath of the cruel, unforgiving sea wherever it may sail.
Damn.
But yet they kept on sailing. John Parker stayed in command for 2 years, during which the Amazon worked mainly in the West Indies trade. In 1863, John Parker was succeeded by a man named William Thompson, who remained in command until 1867. It's said that these were pretty quiet years for the Amazon. One crew member later recalled that, quote, "We went to the West Indies, England, and the Mediterranean, what we call foreign trade. Not a thing unusual happened."
Okay, so ship's vibing. Okay, the ship is vibing.
But in October 1867, at Cape Breton Island, which is an island.
So this is 2 years after the passing of Abraham Lincoln. Sorry, it's just me, Harrison, with the Lincoln facts, baby.
Which is an island on the Atlantic coast of North America and part of Nova Scotia also. The Amazon was driven ashore in a storm, and it was so badly damaged that the owners literally just abandoned it as a wreck. They were like,
R.I.P.
We're done with this cursed ship. Let's just leave it here. We're out. But then a man named Alexander McBean wandered up.
We got McBean. We got nutting.
And acquired the ship as a derelict on October 15th.
Ah.
He was from Glace Bay in Nova Scotia. He was an experienced maritime man. And apparently abandoned ships and stuff are just free
to
take.
I'm an experienced maritime man. Really? I know. This is a very funny expression. He's kind of an experienced maritime
man. Can I just say I learned a lot about, like, maritime life researching this?
You should talk to my dad. My dad would love to talk to you.
Yeah, this is fascinating stuff. Because I was looking up a lot of stuff. I didn't know what it was. And it was just like, ooh, cool. So apparently abandoned ships and stuff are just free to take when considered a derelict. So that's pretty cool.
Okay.
So within a month, Alexander sold the wreck to a local businessman. So this is like pretty weird. Like, he just happened to wander upon this wreck, claimed it as his own, and sold it and made money. But remember this, it'll come
this
back
is
later.
Old times. This is old times. This
but
is old
then
times.
This local businessman sold it to a man named Richard W. Haynes in November 1868, who was an American mariner from New York.
An underwear mogul.
Yeah. So Richard paid $1,750 for the wreck, which is about $33,000 in today's money, if I did my math correctly. And then spent $8,825 restoring it.
Holy crap.
I think the total was like over $100,000 going into the ship.
And that's like in old time money. So millions.
No. Now it would be about $100,000. So Richard made himself captain. And in December 1868, registered the Amazon with the Collector of Customs in New York as an American vessel under a new name.
What's it going to be called now?
Mary Celeste.
Oh, yeah, right. Of course. From the beginning.
What happened to your big brain?
Too busy holding in all those Lincoln facts. Call me Lincolnpedia, baby.
However, the Mary Celeste would change ownership once more before the voyage that would make the ship famous.
The Mary Celeste, of course.
So in October 1869, the ship was seized by Richard's creditors and underwent a major relift in 1872, costing about $10,000. So they enlarged the ship considerably. They increased its length to 103 feet, its breadth to 25.7 feet, and its depth to 16.2 feet.
Shit.
A second deck was also added, and funnily enough, an inspector's report refers to extensions as the poop deck.
I was literally going to ask, did they add on a poop deck they on did. That, baby?
Once all done, Mary Celeste acquired a new captain, Benjamin Spooner Briggs.
We got nutting. We got McBean. We got Spooner.
So Benjamin Briggs was born in Massachusetts, on April 24th, 1835, Taurus King. And was one of five sons of sea captain Nathan Briggs. So all but one of the sons went to sea and two became captains, including Benjamin.
Okay.
Benjamin was said to be a hardcore Christian who read the Bible regularly and attended many prayer meetings. In 1862, he married his cousin, Sarah Elizabeth Cobb. Gotta love it. And they had a Mediterranean honeymoon on board one of his schooner ships called Forest King. They had two children together, a son named Arthur in September 1865 and a daughter named Sophia Matilda in October 1870.
Okay.
And by the time Sophia was born, Benjamin achieved a high standing in his profession as a captain. He did consider retiring from the sea to go into business with his other brother, Oliver, who also was a captain, because they both had just grown tired of living this like life of traveling and not being settled down.
It's kind of sea life.
Yeah, but obviously they didn't do this. They did not practice self-care. Instead, they each invested their savings in a share of a ship. Oliver invested in Julia A. Halleck, and Benjamin invested in the Mary Celeste.
It's pretty weird. They all have like, they're all just like, girls' names.
It was weird doing my research too, because you know how they call boats like her and she, and I was like, I don't want to call it that. I don't know why. So I refer to the ship as it.
Yeah, I mean, it's we don't know what the ship's pronouns are, so we don't want to assume, you know.
That's not why. I just don't like it. So in October 1872, I keep saying 19 out of habit, but 1872, Benjamin officially took command of Mary Celeste for its first voyage, which was to sail to Genoa in Italy. So Benjamin arranged for his wife and his daughter to go with him. His son would stay at home with the grandmother because he was still in school. He was in school. For this voyage, Benjamin chose his crew with very much care. I'm going to name them all because these were all the folks on the famous voyage. So first mate Albert G. Richardson was married to a niece of Winchester, who was another person who owned a share of the boat and had sailed under Benjamin before. Second mate, Andrew Gilling, was about 25 years old, was born in New York, and was Danish. That's all we know about
him.
Fine lad. The steward was newly married Edward William Head, and was signed on with a personal recommendation from Winchester.
We got Head, we got Spoon, we got Spooner, we got McBean.
The four general seamen were all Germans from the Frisian Islands, which is where my grandma's family is from.
Shout out. Shout out to all the German seamen.
Two brothers, Volkert and Boz Lorenzen, Arian Martins, and Gottlieb Gudschell. So a later testimonial described them as, quote, peaceful and first-class sailors. Benjamin wrote a letter to his mother shortly before the voyage and said he was very happy and confident in the ship and the crew.
Nice.
His wife, Sarah, also told her mother that the crew was definitely capable, quote, if they continue as they have begun.
Cool. That's good to know.
All right. So let's get to the infamous voyage.
All right.
On October 20th, 1872, Benjamin arrived at Pier 50 on the East River in New York City to supervise the loading of the ship's cargo that they'll be taking to Genoa.
Cool.
It was 1,701 barrels of denatured alcohol.
Hell yeah.
So Benjamin's wife and daughter joined them there a week later when the ship was just about ready to leave.
That's a powder keg of a ship right there, though. Carrying a bunch of alcohol.
Yeah. On Sunday, November 3rd, Benjamin wrote another letter to his mother and said that he intended to leave on Tuesday and also said, quote, our vessel is in beautiful trim and I hope we shall have a fine passage. So everyone seems very confident in this ship, the crew, everyone's feeling good. So Tuesday morning came along, November 5th, and Mary Celeste left Pier 50.
Mary Celeste. She got the F out of there.
Mary Celeste of Pier 50, along with Benjamin, his wife and daughter, and the seven crew members, and they moved into the New York Harbor. The weather was looking a little sketchy, though, and Benjamin decided to wait for better conditions, so he anchored just off Staten Island, where Sarah sent a final letter to her mother-in-law while they waited. She wrote, quote, tell Arthur, their son, I make great dependence on letters I shall get from him and will try to remember anything that happens on the voyage, which he would be pleased to hear. So implying that, like, they will be in touch. The weather got better 2 days later and Mary Celeste, I did it again, Mary Celeste the harbor and entered into the Atlantic. Now, around this...
Mary entered.
And she Mary entered the Atlantic. So now, around the same time, there was actually another ship getting ready to go to the same place. So this is important.
This is important.
It was a Canadian ship called De Gracia, and it was laying near Hoboken, New Jersey, waiting for cargo of petroleum destined for Genoa as well. They were going via Gibraltar.
Okay.
The captain was David Morehouse, and the first mate was Oliver DeVoe, and both were highly skilled as well. Captain Benjamin and David Morehouse were said to probably know each other casually, with rumors that they actually dined together on the evening before the Mary Celeste left. Okay. This can't be confirmed, but, you know.
It can't be denied.
Can't be denied. So anyway, De Gracia departed for Gibraltar on November 15th, following the same general route. 8 days after Mary Celeste left.
Okay.
Now.
That also seems important.
It is. The De Gracia is doing its thing, sailing away, and is located midway between the Azores and the coast of Portugal at about 1 p.m. on Wednesday, December 4th, 1872, land time. Captain David Morehouse is resting in his quarters when a helmsman comes in frantically telling him that there's a vessel about 6 miles away heading crazily or unsteadily towards the De Gracia. The ship's erratic movements and the offset of its sails led David to suspect that something was horribly wrong. As the crazy ship drew closer, David could make out nobody on deck, and he received no reply to his signals he was putting out, which were like small black flags or something. So he sent first mate DeVoe and second mate John Wright in a ship's boat to investigate what's happening on that ship. So the two saw that it was, in fact, the Mary Celeste, based on the name on the ship's stern. They then climbed onto the ship and found it deserted.
Whoa.
The sails were partly set and in poor condition. Some were actually just missing altogether. It kind of looked like the crew was suddenly interrupted during routine maintenance or something. Whoa. Much of the rigging was damaged, with ropes hanging loosely over the sides. The ship's single lifeboat was missing, as well as the compass, which was usually covered in a glass case, and the case was, like, smashed to the ground. this indicates that probably some of the crew did escape, but the one lifeboat the ship had absolutely cannot hold everyone on board. But why there was nobody on the boat anymore was not immediately clear at all. The ship wasn't sinking. There was about 3.5 feet of water in the hold, which is significant, but not an alarming amount for a ship of this size.
No.
The rigging could have been easily fixed, too. It didn't look like food was being prepared when abandoned. It was still all kind of like stored away. And there were no signs of a fire or any kind of violence. And by all means, the evidence indicated almost like an orderly departure from the ship.
Okay.
Or perhaps from the missing lifeboat, but. So the two make their way onto the Mary Celeste and check the ship's daily log in the mate's cabin. And its final entry was dated 8 a.m. on November 25th, which was 9 days earlier.
And what they say.
It recorded Mary Celeste's position then off Santa Maria Island in the Azores, nearly 400 nautical miles from the point where De Gracia encountered her.
And then what did they say?
There was nothing in the logs that indicated there was any danger happening or anything.
Ah.
But they noticed that the cabin interiors were wet and untidy from water that had entered through doorways and skylights. They also found Captain Benjamin's room ransacked and his personal items scattered around his cabin, including a sheathed sword under the bed. But most of the ship's papers were missing, along with the captain's navigational instruments. So First Mate DeVoe reported these findings to Captain Morehouse, who decided to bring the ship into Gibraltar, which was about 600 nautical miles away. So he divided De Gracia's crew of eight between the two vessels and sent DeVoe and two experienced seamen to Mary Celeste, while he and four others remained on De Gracia. So for this journey, the weather was relatively calm, but each ship was seriously undercrewed now, so it was taking a long time to get to Gibraltar. De Gracia reached Gibraltar on December 12th, but the Mary Celeste encountered fog.
And then what happened?
Which De Gracia said that they noticed it seemed to engulf just the ship and nowhere else. Not even their own ship.
That is spooky.
Yeah. And Mary Celeste arrived the next morning. So upon arrival, the Mary Celeste was immediately impounded by the Vice Admiralty Court to prepare for salvage hearings. So remember how I said that an abandoned ship is a derelict and that basically anybody can pick it up and then sell it and do what they want with it?
Yes.
Well, after arriving in Gibraltar, DeVoe wrote to his wife that the ordeal of bringing the ship in was such that, quote, "I can hardly tell what I am made of, but I do not care so long as I got in safe. Whoa. I shall be paid well for Mary Celeste." So
they make a deal with the devil?
That's sketchy. So once on dry land, the crew refused to recall what happened while they were immersed in the fog and refused to step back onto the Mary Celeste for reasons unknown. Okay, so the salvage court hearings began in Gibraltar on December 17th, 1872, and were conducted by a man named Frederick Solly Flood.
Okay. What's his deal?
He was the Attorney General of Gibraltar. Flood was described by a historian of the Mary Celeste affair as a man, quote, whose arrogance and pomposity were inversely proportional to his IQ, and as the sort of man who, once he had made up his mind about something, couldn't be shifted. Sounds like a Capricorn.
Cap King.
So Flood quickly came to the conclusion that foul play was to blame for the abandoned ship.
Okay.
On December 23rd, Flood ordered an examination of Mary Celeste, which was carried out by John Austin, surveyor of shipping, with the assistance of a diver. John Austin noted cuts on each side of the bow, caused, he thought, by a sharp instrument, and found possible traces of blood on the captain's sword that was left behind.
Oh.
His report emphasized that the ship did not appear to have been struck by heavy weather because a vial of sewing machine oil was found upright in its place. The diver, who was looking underneath the ship and everything, said that it had not been involved in a collision or run aground, like scrape the bottom.
Okay.
And a further investigation by a group of Royal Naval captains agreed with John Austin's opinion that the cuts on the bow had been caused deliberately. They also discovered stains on one of the ship's rails that might have been blood. Also like a deep mark possibly caused by an axe. So now Flood was more convinced than ever that this was caused by foul play rather than a natural disaster. And the first people he thought were responsible
was the Canadian crew.
Yeah, Captain Morehouse and his crew on the De Gracia. He said that he thought they were hiding something. Initially, he thought it was insurance fraud, but these claims apparently were refuted by the owners of the Mary Celeste.
Okay.
But still, he was convinced that because Captain Morehouse knew the route Mary Celeste was taking, maybe they set a trap. Like, he and his crew could have waited for Mary Celeste, and then after luring Captain Benjamin Briggs and his crew on board the De Gracia, killed them and threw them overboard. But investigators quickly deduced that this wasn't possible because De Gracia was a slower ship and parted New York Harbor 8 days after the Mary Celeste. And there's no way they would have caught up to it before arriving in Gibraltar. There were also some setbacks in Flood's theory because scientific analysis of the stains found on the sword and elsewhere on the ship that it was not blood. Those stains weren't blood. Also,
what were they?
I don't know. Not blood, though.
Okay, okay.
Also, those deliberate markings on the bow were found to not be man-made, but came from the natural actions of the sea on the ship's timbers. So, with nothing to support his suspicions, Flood reluctantly released Mary Celeste from the court's jurisdiction on February 25th. And 2 weeks later, a locally raised crew headed by Captain George Blatchford from Massachusetts, the Mary Celeste, left Gibraltar for Genoa and carried on.
Mary Celeste.
Yep. So it completed its trip to Genoa with a new captain and carried on.
And that's it?
Yeah, but, you know, we're going to talk about theories.
Okay, okay, okay. I was like,
it's like
it?
Roanoke on sea. It's
crazy. No one knows?
Well.
Yeah, let's hear the theories.
Okay, so of course, theory number one, pirates.
Of course.
Yeah. So more specifically, Riffian pirates, who were active off the coast of Morocco in the 1870s.
Uh-huh.
They were Arabic-speaking people from northwestern Africa, and they historically have like a very impoverished, eroded, deforested, and poorly irrigated region. So anyone born in a Riffian family will kind of have like a tough life. So that's why the Riffians often turn to piracy to provide a better life for their families. In addition to boarding and capturing merchant shipping, the Riffians engaged in what they call razzia.
Okay.
Which were raids on European coastal towns and villages. And the main purpose of these raids were to capture slaves to be sold into the Ottoman Empire.
Okay.
The Riffians didn't discriminate when they were trying to capture slaves. They could be of any race or religion, gender. Now, if this really was the case for what happened to the Mary Celeste, the Riffians would have waited for the perfect conditions, calm waters, in the dead of night, and almost silently they would have rowed their small boats towards the Mary Celeste, readying their boarding ropes and clutching their weapons, and then as one, they would have attacked. Women and children would be taken as slaves, and any men who struggled would have been killed.
Okay.
However, a historian named Charles E.D. Fay says that if it was pirates, they would have looted the ship. And the personal possessions of the captain and the crew were left undisturbed. Exactly. Especially the sword.
Yeah,
I was going to say, like,
a lot of money.
Even items of significant value were left alone.
Yeah.
Okay. Another theory, and a really troubling one, has to do with Captain Benjamin Briggs. So as we know, he was a devout Christian and deeply religious. He would constantly read his Bible while at sea. He would often quote passages as solutions to many of his vessel's problems. He apparently was fond of quoting Jonah chapter 4, I think it is, verses 9 to 11, which is, "But God said to Jonah, is it right for you to be angry about the plant? It is, he said, and I'm so angry I wish I were dead." So Benjamin Briggs would also violently attest to the strength of his own faith during prayer meetings often held on the ship, something that was noted in some of the crew's personal diaries with varying levels of nervousness. Like, they were like, this is a little much, I guess. So it's these diary entries that led historian John Gilbert Lockhart to conclude that Captain Briggs had somehow entered a fit of religious mania and rage, hunting his own crew throughout the ship and murdering them one by one before taking his own life. But after this theory was put out to the public, Lockhart conducted several interviews with the surviving relatives of Captain Briggs and was assured that Benjamin did not have a violent bone in his body and was incapable of such violent rage. Huh. So as a result, Lockhart actually issued a public apology and withdrew his theory from contention. But, you know, the ship was said to be cursed.
Yeah.
So what if it was like a Shining situation?
Correct.
Right? Like, the ship just drove him crazy. Another theory is that the ship was attacked by some kind of large sea creature. Specifically, the colossal squid.
Ah.
Now, this is where some really cool facts come in. I love a good fact.
Okay.
The colossal squid, they're known to have sizes up to 50 feet in length.
Okay.
And they're one of the largest living organisms ever recorded. Normally, like giant squids, regular squids, I guess, have those suckers on their tentacles lined with small teeth. But the colossal squid's tendril limbs are also equipped with razor-sharp, tri-pointed hooks, while its body is considerably wider and therefore heavier than that of the giant squid. This is called deep-sea giantism, which is really interesting. Apparently, the animals down in the deep sea can be much larger than those that live in the shallows due to low temperatures, a variety of food sources, and reduced competition among predators because there's not many down there. Low temperatures are thought to increase cell size and lifespan down there, which would lead to an increased body size, which is interesting.
Yee?
So now here's what people believe happened. You know, the Mary Celeste was only 9 feet deep below decks,
right,
meaning a colossal squid could have easily been able to wrap its tentacles all the way around the much smaller ship. It could have just started picking off crew members, maybe like nice and neatly, since there wasn't really that much damage done to the ship.
And it could have rattled the ship enough to move the stuff around.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, I can't picture a colossal squid just, like, carefully picking up the people and not making some kind of big mess, but I don't know. Or maybe, like,
they said it was a mess, but not taken, right?
It just wasn't, it was, like, messy. Like, the ship wasn't damaged, really, except for those two things I talked, like, the cuts and the sails were weird. But maybe, like, this started happening and some people saw this coming, so they tried to escape from the ship using not only lifeboat on board, and this would explain the weird set of the ship's sails, because the squid's tentacles would have definitely torn and ripped the fabric and the ropes.
Right.
But only do superficial damage to the ship's timber, apparently. Also, the rope for the lifeboat was cut and not untied, so it's clear people were trying to leave quickly. Lastly, there's also natural phenomenon theories, like perhaps a severe waterspout strike, which is one of those like tornado-looking things that you see sometimes.
Okay.
Which would explain the amount of water in the ship when discovered and the ragged state of its rigging and sails.
Right.
When the crew saw the water coming in, maybe they assumed it had taken on more water than it actually did, or assumed they were going to sink. Maybe that's why they left. I don't know. Now, what most people believe is that there was an explosion in the Mary Celeste's hold due to some of the cargo. You know, it's alcohol.
The alcohol, right. Yeah. That's what I was saying, yeah.
Many don't believe this because of the lack of damage on the ship.
Right.
There's no clear evidence of an explosion. But in 2006, an experiment carried out for Channel 5 TV by chemist Andrea Sella of University College in London showed results that helped revive this explosion theory.
Huh.
So he built a model of the hold with paper cartons representing the barrels of alcohol. Using butane gas, he created an explosion that caused a considerable blast and a ball of flame, and there was no fire damage within the replica of the hold. He said, quote, "What we created was a pressure wave type of explosion. Yeah. There was a spectacular wave of flame, but behind it was relatively cool air. No soot was left behind, and there was no burning or scorching." So it could have been an explosion. Apparently in this experiment, like, it didn't seem to damage the replica that much.
So weird.
As for the Mary Celeste now, after finishing its journey to Genoa, the Mary Celeste arrived back in the New York Harbor on September 17th, 1873. But after the slew of newspaper stories describing the hearings in Gibraltar, the suspicions of bloodshed and betrayal, the superstitious sailors of New York and New England simply refused to sail on the ship. The ship rotted in the harbor, and no one would touch it. And then the following year, the consortium sold the ship at a considerable loss to a partnership of New York businessmen.
Demon.
Under new ownership, the Mary Celeste found itself in the South Atlantic in 1879. And the ship was well known in the maritime community for being a ship that barely made a profit, since it was forced to pay like hella good wages to the men who sailed on it because of its reputation for being cursed. Like, they needed incentive to get people on this thing. So the ship was occasionally mentioned in the shipping news, and that's how we know about its whereabouts during early 1879, a time when apparently the crew put out a call from the island of St. Helena seeking emergency medical attention for their captain, Edgar Tuthill, who had suddenly and mysteriously fallen ill, and Captain Tuthill died on the island, making him the third of the Mary Celeste captains to die prematurely while commanding the vessel. So now, among sailors, there was no doubt that the Mary Celeste was cursed. They started calling it the Ship of Death. Additionally, in July of 1885, the Mary Celeste was at the center of a conspiracy to commit insurance fraud.
Boris.
Captain Gilman C. Parker was being held in Boston on charges of willfully casting away a ship, a crime known as barratry, which at the time carried the death penalty.
Hey!
So Captain Gilman also conspired with others to claim a cargo of near worthless items that were fraudulently documented as being considerably more valuable.
Wow.
Yet legal loopholes with insurance payments and whatever caused the trials to fall apart and Captain Gilman to walk away a free man. But he wasn't able to escape the curse of Mary Celeste because his reputation was left in shreds and he died of poverty just 3 months later.
Dang.
Also, one of Captain Gilman's crewmates began a slow descent into madness, losing his mind to the extent that he took his own life while heavily referencing the cursed ship in his suicide note. As for the fate of the Mary Celeste, it was then deliberately wrecked off the coast of Haiti in 1885.
Wow.
And people think there's been, you can look up articles and stuff, and it's like, we found the
ruins of the Mary Celeste.
Ruins. I was like, what's that word? Ruins of the Mary Celeste, but I think a lot of them aren't true.
Right.
So it's just underwater, as it should be.
Well,
put that thing, get that thing away from
get
us.
Get that thing out of here.
You think it's cursed?
If the people that were on it think it's cursed, yeah.
Do you know what happened to the whole crew?
No, I don't have any idea.
No?
I imagine they got spooked and jumped ship. Or if something happened. I mean, the pirates thing also makes sense.
Yeah, also like, the orderly departure thing, like literally maybe they just lured them off and were like, you know, come or you're all gonna die,
right?
Like, and then while that was happening, maybe some escaped with the lifeboat. But I think that's the only logical explanation too, because like it was not it couldn't be stressed enough how competent Briggs was as a captain. Like, okay, he knew what he was doing. So like,
yeah,
what else? Like, I don't know what else would it could be.
Makes sense.
Could also be the squid.
Could be.
I love giant squids. They're my favorite.
That one sounds kind of scary, though.
No, I like them.
Okay.
If you don't know this, octopuses are my favorite.
Octopussies.
They're my favorite, I want to say animal, but they're not an animal.
Cephalopod.
Of all time.
Do you know what they are?
Hmm?
They're a cephalopod, right?
I think
right?
so, yeah. They're my favorite of all time. I love them so much. They're the cutest things ever. I just want one to climb on me.
Cool. Well, climb me folks, like a if you tree. Know how to make that happen,
if you have a pet octopus,
send a DM to Spooky Show Pod on Instagram or Twitter. Rate 5 stars on Apple Pods or Spotify. And if you know how to get a giant squid for Kate to hang out with, let us know.
Okay. Well, maybe not. I would like to see one. But I would like to hang out with maybe an octopus. I've always wanted one as a pet, but they're really... You need, like, a tank that's sealed so tight because they can get out of anything. They can fit through any crack.
Yeah.
It would also probably be mean for me to keep one as a pet. Okay.
Correct.
Anyway, thank you all so much for listening. I have some fun things coming up. Well, a fun thing coming up for the show. No, two things that I can think of right now. So stay tuned.
Heck yeah, baby. Have the...
Don't you say my line. Okay. Thank you for listening. Have the best week of your entire life. Bye.